Welcome to a brand new episode of Seize the Moment podcast. Today we have a very special guest. We have Mark Tautert. He won the gold medal in the speed skating in the 1500 meter event at the 2010 Vancouver Winter Olympics. After retiring from competitive speed skating, Mark has continued to make a positive impact as a best-selling author, successful entrepreneur with a global health and food business. He's the host of the podcast Drive. He's a motivational speaker and representative for some of the largest organizations in the world. He's been featured on TED Talk and also serves as an on-air speed skating pundit for Dutch broadcaster NOS. And his new book, available on April 9th, is called The Stoic Mindset, Living the 10 Principles of Stoicism. Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for coming on.
Great. Thanks for asking me.
Absolutely. And so in his book, Mark wrote, in those tense weeks before the 2010 Olympic Games, I read about Stoic philosophy for the first time. Whether I have it to thank for my gold medal, I cannot say. But since then, I haven't stopped reading about and applying Stoic ideas. Developing a Stoic mindset has made me both relaxed and more driven. We are accustomed, and this definitely goes for professional athletes, to the idea that we can control our world and force certain results. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we can also understand that we don't truly have that power. Opponents can be better, the market can be up or down, a pandemic can suddenly throw a wrench in the works, or you can just have plain bad luck. The real world is chaotic, hard, and unpredictable. How can we train ourselves to better handle this, to stay true to ourselves, to find peace and fulfillment while chasing our dreams? I found the answer to these questions in Stoicism, a school of thought that emerged in ancient Greece around 300 BC and is characterized by practical wisdom. Stoicism resonated with the Romans for centuries as well. It's especially from this Roman period that a number of important texts have fortunately survived, and I devoured these works in particular. From Seneca, a learned, ambitious orator, writer, and statesman, from Marcus Aurelius, a wise, dutiful emperor, and from Epictetus, a man born into slavery, who was given freedom and revealed himself to be a stern yet celebrated teacher. The Stoic mindset helped me channel my drive and continues to make me calmer, more effective, and more successful. So as many of our audience know, we talk about Stoicism, God knows how many times here. We've done multiple episodes on Stoicism, which we absolutely love. We just recently had on Tom Morris, who wrote Stoicism for Dummies. So, Mark, can you tell us a little bit about your background, obviously, especially professionally and athletically? And then, obviously, before we get into the Stoic ideas, can you tell us about why you thought your life was so chaotic and why you actually, in the beginning, were a little bit more, inquisitive or were searching for something like this sort of philosophy?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I dreamt about speed skating. I was crazy about speed skating. When the ice would be here, the water would freeze over. I was out on the ice of the North Pole all day. And the North Pole, that's how our ice rink was called in the town where I lived. So I loved to do that. Only I was not that talented. So I thought, maybe something else is there for me in life. So I went to school. I had a normal upbringing until I was 17, 18, 19 years old. I suddenly had a big effect on myself by focusing on what I wanted to achieve. So I got good in speed skating and I became the biggest talent there was in Holland. Mm-hmm. It's a big sport here in Holland. So I love to do it. And I went into the professional world of speed skating. I became a European champion, I won World Cups. I won races, but I never got to the Olympics, which is the biggest race in sports, of course. I missed out on the Olympics in 2002. I missed out on the Olympics in 2006. I trained for them. Mm-hmm. I was a professional, so this was my goal. But it took me actually 12 years. So another Olympic campaign, which takes 4 years times three. Wow. So when in 2010, I got the chance to start at an Olympic Games, the pressure was really high. Mm-hmm. And that's the world I grew up in, actually, a world of getting everything out of yourself, but also dealing with pressure, wanting to be the best, wanting to win. And when I was really young, that pressure really put a burden on my shoulders. And so much focus on the end result kept me from actually reaching that end result. So I learned a lot of some kind of paradoxical ideas and that's where philosophy or especially Stoicism helped me to channel that drive, that ambition to not be blinded or blindsided, but to really focus on the right things, the things I can control and the things I like my character, like values as courage, being courageous, giving everything I have. So I learned and I transitioned from being a really young, aggressive skater who wants to win everything and conquer the world to, of course, somebody who still wants to win. But also be more relaxed about it. And really, yeah, I had to overcome some obstacles in my life, in my personal life, dealing with setbacks. And I needed those setbacks to grow. And when I became a better person, so to say, and a more fully grown person in emotional sense, then I became a better speed skater. So for me, the first time I started in the Olympic Games in 2010 is the games I won Olympic gold, because all these pieces of the puzzle came together, the pieces I struggled with. So for me, that was a big thing, and people knew my story by then. They knew how many times I missed an Olympic Games. So yeah, that was kind of a big thing. I became Sportsman of the Year, and I had a great career also afterwards. And that for me, I think, for me, that was a big factor in that was philosophy, just practical philosophy, stoicism, to help me to channel that drive and be calm about all the chaos there can be in a life. You know, if you push for a gold medal, you push really hard, you raise the bar really high. And then that brings about a lot of challenge. You face yourself, actually. You face the world, you face pressure, you face competition, but mostly you face yourself.
I could imagine, being in reaction to those externals, the chaos, the expectations of the audience, of a family, the expectations that you have on yourself, the goals that you have in mind in terms of what you have to train for that particular day. All these different things, it's almost like a drain on your mental resources and even physical resources in a way. But then to actually be able to order or rather first to maybe examine these things and then see your relationship to them. Yep. And then to sort of order your life in a way that will make you less reactive or perhaps even unreactive, that frees up so many more resources, allows you to perform better, to interact better, not just in the domain of sports, but also in interactions with other people, I imagine.
And then Mark, when you discovered stoicism, or when you were actually looking for something like stoicism, better question, is it that you were looking for something that would help you become more or less non-reactive? Is it that you were looking for kind of an escape or for something else?
No, actually, it more grew organically. First, I agree, right? The thing is, if you're an entrepreneur, or if you're an athlete, or if you just, whatever you do, if you put everything you have in there, it becomes personal, right? So failures, setbacks, they become personal. So you feel those emotions. That's natural. So I really had to learn to separate who I am from what I want to achieve. You know, my identity is not being an Olympic gold medalist or an Olympian. That's not my identity. That's a goal I reached. So I really had to learn to separate those two. And by stoicism, what affected me the most when I got into stoicism a little bit was when I missed out on the Olympics of 2002. I trained really hard. I was a big talent in Holland. I signed a big contract, put a lot of pressure on my shoulders, because in every interview, I shouted out like, I want to win Olympic gold. And people like that, right? I got a lot of interviews, a lot of pressure on my shoulders. And the Olympics were coming up in 2002. And it was not going really well on the team I was training in. It was a lot of pressure, internal pressure. It was not an environment that was relaxed. And for me, I was dealing with my parents going through a divorce, and they were fighting each other. And I'm the oldest son. I have two younger brothers. So naturally, I was inclined to help my father and mother get through this. Also for myself, I thought, hey, let's get through this. Make arrangements so everybody can get on with their lives. But the more I did that, the harder that became. And I couldn't control that. I couldn't force my will upon my parents or anything. So I fled into the one thing I thought I could control. And that was just to train harder, train harder, train harder. So I trained 7 days a week, three times a day, didn't take any rest days. And I thought that was the way to go, but actually, in the whole winter of 2002, I was severely overtrained. I killed myself. And then that's when it hit me. I'm like, whoa, How is it possible that we can fool ourselves like this as human beings, right? We think we can work harder and get more results. We think we can get people together and arrange how they work it out together, like my parents. And actually, the harder I tried, the worse it seemed to get. So for me, it was like an epiphany, like, whoa, I can't train. I'm lying on my couch, sick in my bed. I'm not going to the Olympics. But I can read, I can learn. And that's actually when I first started to read about Marcus Aurelius' Meditations. I was a fan of history in my youth. I love history. So I knew a bit about the philosophy schools. I know about the Romans, the Greece, and their empire. So I read a beautiful text about Marcus Aurelius, the impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way. So I thought that's a beautiful way of looking at setbacks. Actually, it's not the end of the road you take. It's not the end of my career. This is an obstacle on my path, and it's up to me to find a new way. And that's the challenge in life, actually. So I could work on that challenge, read, get better, get wiser to not fall in the same trap again. So that's for the first time for me, I encountered stoicism. And actually, right before the Olympic Games in 2010, that was 9 years later, I read a lot about Seneca. And he really helped me with the last piece. And that was, we think about gold medals if we think about professional sports, especially right before an Olympic Games. Everybody talks about medals. All interviews is about, what's your goal? Of course, gold. But actually, Seneca says, well, you should focus on values, on courage, on, because that's what you can control, right? Mm-hmm. The internal state of mind, your character, if you're courageous when you feel fear, and I can guarantee you feel fear right before an Olympic start. It's not to push that fear away, but you can counter that with courage. And you can counter that with doing your best, with showing up, giving everything you have. And I think that's a beautiful way to look at it. So the Stoic way to look at also performance, look at yourself, I think is a beautiful way. And it enriches my life. So it frees up a lot of space to actually enjoy the ride, actually feel those positive emotions.
Yeah, and then the movie Cool Runnings, if anybody's seen it with John K. Right. So do you remember that? I love it. So do you remember that line where he says to him, he says, you know,
are you dead, man?
So do you remember that line where he says to him something along the lines of, he's like, you know, Doris, if you're not enough with a gold medal, you'll never be enough without one. Sorry, the other way around. If you're not enough without the gold medal, you'll never be enough with one. Yeah. So when you think about like sort of being more focused on the results, I think that's what's so cool about Stoicism. It's ultimately telling you that these are preferred indifference. So meaning that like these are nice things to have, but ultimately they're never going to make you feel whole or fulfilled. And so, but the thing is, what's so interesting about Stoicism, you could kind of bastardize it and you could use it as a means to that end. So the thing of like, let's say differentiating and separating into categories and saying, okay, here are the things that we can control and here are the things that we can't. It's so easy to say, oh, well, I can control my training schedule. So meaning that if I want to, I can train 7 days a week. Who's to say that I can't, right? So I can feel good about myself in doing it. And so what? Yes, it happens to, or you think, you know, it happens to get me the result that I'm looking for, but I'm just being the best version of myself that I can be. So what would you tell somebody if they say, well, you know, I love this idea of Stoicism, and then they take it to this toxic version of it, right? Yeah. Or they make it a toxic version of it.
Yeah, how would you react to that? Yeah, I think there's a lot of misconception about that. Indeed, it becomes a toxic version. I would say I have one question. Are you God? Right? Do you think you are God? Do you think you can put your will up onto the world, right? That's actually Stoicism 180 degrees around. You know, it's flipped around. The Stoics don't think they can control the world. They think they have control over their input. But they also think they need to make wise decisions. So yes, you can work hard, but to what end? What is your goal with that? And what's the price you pay? Are you aware of that? And why do you want to win? What's your judgment behind that, right? So it's really, I call it in my book, in chapter 3, Win by Not Focusing on Winning. And it seems like a paradox, right? If I want to win, and that's, for a Stoic, that's not good or bad. So There's no value judgment on winning. I think I want to win because I think it's important to me. But for a good life, it's actually indeed, right? If you're not worthy without the medal, you're not worthy with the medal. Mm-hmm. And that's a really, I think, a mistake a lot of people make, even athletes, even entrepreneurs. They think, if I win the gold medal, I will be happy. If I sell my company, make $1 million or more, I will be happy. And that's a toxic way of looking at happiness. You won't find fulfillment in that. And that's actually a shame, I think. It's such a shame, because you will not live your life fully. Because, of course, you can get second or fourth or fifth even. You don't even have a medal. So that's a good question to ask yourself. What if you put everything you have on the line, like I did for 12 years? And I actually asked this question myself. But what if you fail or become fourth or fifth? Will that all be worthless? No, it's not worthless. For me, and I really told this to myself before the race, it's the lessons I learned. I had to deal with my father. I was angry at him. And we got back together because I learned that staying angry is me. It's my judgment. I can do that. I can put that aside. And a lot of other things, dealing with pressure, it's me. It's on me. It's not the externals. It's not the outside world. So I learned that. So even if I would have been fourth or fifth, I would still be content with the journey. But that doesn't mean I don't give everything to win a gold medal. That can also be the case. And I think these things coexist together, only they become toxic if you flip it around.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially when it comes to judging others. Like let's say in the relationship you're talking about with your father, right?
Yeah.
Essentially, by making a judgment, you're almost boxing, like out of all the millions of ways that can the situation or the relationship can be thought about, it's almost as if by being decisive about that judgment, or if it's just a snap judgment, it's like being blinded to everything else regarding that relationship, in the sense that, you know, you don't necessarily think about what's the other person's perspective. What were the events that led them to act how they act? Is even my judgment of this, is it even correct? Maybe my judgment could be false. Or is this emotion serving me? Right. Yeah. Even to have an emotion related to the judgment, it's blocking you from taking other sorts of action or thinking about different things and using resources that way. So it's a very interesting thing in terms of like the opportunity cost of choosing to make a judgment.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. That's for me the case when I missed out on the Olympics in 2006.
Yeah.
I had blocked my father for 6 years out of my life. I thought he was a bad father. He did wrong. I blamed him, and I was angry about the situation, and I blamed him for it. So I felt a lot of anger in me. And it was kind of strange because I had a great team. We measured every approach we did. And so my numbers were green. My dashboard all looked really good, but I was not going to the Olympics. So I said to myself, what's wrong here? I didn't understand it. And I came to Epictetus, actually. He says, he words it in a beautiful way, right? He says, We encounter things in our lives, right? We have situations we encounter, and we have emotions coming from these situations. But he would say that's not quite correct, because there's something in between that event and that emotion, and that's your own judgment. So he would say to me, I always envision these Stoics talking to me, whether it be Marcus Aurelius or Epictetus. What would they say to me in this moment? And Epictetus would say to me, that anger doesn't come from your father, it comes from you. Mm-hmm. It comes from your judgment of your father. I think my father is a bad father. I blame him for this and that and that. And I thought about it more like that. And I was like, whoa, it's in me. And then I have to question myself, right? Actually, I have reflection, philosophy. I thought, well, I'm studying philosophy as a hobby, and I should question myself. Am I a better father 20 years down the road? Do I know what it means to have not any contact with your sons, me and my two brothers, for 6 years for my father's? No, I don't know that. I'm not a father. So instead of judging him and blaming him for everything, it's maybe wiser to just let him back in, ask questions. So we don't have to become best friends all of a sudden. But so I called him up and I said, hey, Dad, I want you back in my life. I'm not here to judge you. Things happened, but let's get contact flowing again. And that's where I really learned to ask questions, not judging, but how was this for you, et cetera, et cetera. Not say, well, it was bad for me. Listen to me. So I think I grew up actually, and my father was there in my life. And 4 years later at the Olympic Games in which I won gold, he was there sitting in the stands with my two brothers cheering me on. So for me, and that's also when my anger disappeared. So I thought this is, I think, what stoicism means, right? You think about your judgment of an event or of a person or something that happens to you, and that's where you reflect on. And you see that emotion that comes from that judgment. So when you understand yourself or a situation better, that emotion fades away. So that negative emotion, you can let go of. I didn't have to be angry anymore. So I was not angry. I felt relaxed, and that helped me become a better athlete, because when I cramp up, I feel negative emotions. I do this. I can do it with my hands and make a fist. I can't skate fast like this. I have to be relaxed. I have to make long strides and be really aggressive in a race, but also relaxed. And for me, that freed up a lot of space. I was more chill, relaxed. So I became a better person, but also a better athlete. That's a pretty good deal, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then also when you learn about the other person's perspective, I mean, you start to take it less personally, which is, I think, really important. So when people hurt our feelings, I mean, we often think, oh, this person did this to me because he believes, or she, whomever, that I deserve this. I deserve this kind of treatment. Yeah. And then, I mean, oftentimes what you find out is that the other person, first of all, doesn't actually believe that you deserve that sort of treatment. And they're also, on the other hand, maybe not nine times out of 10, like, it's hard to quantify, but a lot of times, more so than you would think, they're pretty remorseful about what they did to you. And sometimes they even feel like they had no choice. So once you start to get the other person's perspective, you start to learn, like, oh, okay, cool. It wasn't that this person feels like, you know, I'm inferior to them or again unworthy of them. There was this whole other world going on that I wasn't really aware of.
Mm. It's hard, right, to do. It sounds easy, but it's, in fact, it's really, really hard. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And especially, when you struggle with a, let's say, chronic sense of inferiority, where you think, well, you know, people always do this to me. People always sort of neglect me or shun me or think that I'm unworthy of their time or their space or whatever it is. And you just think, oh, this person's full of shit. Like, they're just giving me excuses, right? They know what they did. They just feel sorry for me. And there's a lot of work to be done there. Yeah. So in terms of stoicism, right? So what would be the application here? So in terms of actually suspending judgment, what would one of the great thinkers say about it?
Well, they would say, like, even the judgment about yourself, right? What you talked about, you can judge other people, but the judgment is also, can also be about yourself. So what the Stoics would say is take a step back and ask yourself where that judgment comes from. So it's actually a quite rational process. Mm-hmm. And I like that about Stoicism. So you get back, reflect, and I'm angry. Well, Epictetus would say, if I lash out to somebody, I'm complicit in the whole story, right? Yeah. I can have the leadership, or I can have the control to say, hey, you hurt my feelings, but what does that mean? Why am I hurt? Are you right with your critique on me? Then I could listen to you if I take you seriously, right? Oh yeah, then I can learn. I don't have to be angry. If it's somebody I don't like or I don't take seriously, I could let it go. I could just rub it off my shoulders, right? So why are you angry? Or maybe there's truth in there and you don't want to hear it. So it's really examining your judgment, your own thinking. And that's what the philosophers would say or do. And that's where I really thought about even a gold medal. What does it mean? Why do I chase it? Is it because I want status? Is it because I want to make a lot of money? And I'm not against making money, right? I'd rather be rich than poor. But still, it's something deeper than that. And maybe it's to show myself that I can do this. And that's good. And that's okay. But it's really be aware of that. Don't fool yourself.
Right. And it's the fooling yourself part that I think is really important. Again, I'm going to use the example of Cool Running. So Darius asked him, he says, he said, I can't believe it. Like, why would you do that? You seem to have achieved so much success in your life. You had the respect of all of your colleagues. You had the respect of just people under you, people who you probably would have mentored at some point down the line. You know, why would you give that up? And that's, when he made the comment. And I think the comment essentially means that, differentiating this now from Stoicism, where the Stoics would call this a preferred indifferent, because you can't really control it, right? At some point, you're going to age out of the Olympics. you're certainly going to age out of sports. And then at that point, I mean, the level of status that you had before, I mean, you're probably not going to get it. And then on top of that, there's also, like, let's say in American sports, like, we have like this fear of kind of repeat. I'm sure there's a sports everywhere, but we have like this fear of repeating, right? So it's like, what happens if we have like dynasties here, like with football, and people are like, oh my God, I definitely want our team to be a dynasty. But then what happens is, like, it's incredibly hard to win a Super Bowl twice. So if you win once, I mean, you're kind of lucky. It's like, you might get, you know, pretty far the next time down the line, but chances of you actually winning again are very, very slim. So the thing here is that people could become so obsessed with it and also feel so entitled to it. Like, now that I won it the first time, now I feel like I deserve it. And this is a thing that's a part of me. And so in the movie, John Candy was essentially saying that, like, you can't do that. You can't live where the gold medal is just a like perpetual part of your character. And so where the Stoics, which is what I love about it, they would differ and they would say, well, the thing is with these preferred indifference, these externals, they can never be a part of your character. I mean, it's kind of like, it's sort of like a gold chain or like a watch, right? Yeah, sure, you might have it. You might enjoy it for some time. But at the point, at the end of it, it's all going to be taken away. So what John Candy, I thought, in that message was saying that the world will never take it away from me. I will cheat if I have to, but I will never let this fundamental part of my character be taken away. And my God, man, what a terrible way to live.
Yeah, it is. Actually, that's where I think the beauty of Stoicism is. It's about character, right? Your internal values, that's what you control. Your internal state of mind is your internal value system. It's not the outside results. And we think of that because if we look at television, it's about the results. If we, everything is about the results. So I think that's a big factor. When I had an interview right before the start of my Olympic race in Vancouver in 20th February 2010, I had an interview and I was kind of feeling calm but also aggressive at the same time. It felt really good. And I said to the interviewer, like, you know what I cannot stand? It's like football, or in this our case, soccer coaches, who after their competition say, we lost, but we played better. We deserved to win. So there's no such thing. You don't deserve anything in life. You don't deserve to win. You don't deserve an outcome, right? That's not how it works. You want the outcome, but you don't deserve it. So actually, if you think that, so it's your judgment. If your opinion is that you deserve to win the game, you actually are worse off. Because you won't work on, you blame somebody else or you blame a referee, you won't get better, you don't work on yourself, right? The All Blacks, the New Zealand rugby team, would say better people make better All Blacks, right? So work on yourself, be better, be a better person, not complaint, don't think you deserve anything. So that's what I really took into my head. So I'm not going to complain what happens. I can become last, but for one thing, I can make a promise, is if that gun goes off, I will give everything I have. Yes, I feel fear. Yes, I feel pressure. I see the royal family sitting in the stands. I see 10,000 people sitting in the stands, cameras everywhere. Of course, I feel pressure. And that's what I think is the beauty about Stoicism and the misconceptions. It's not pushing your emotions away or being emotionless. But yes, you feel these emotions, but we're human beings. We can rationalize these emotions and we can feel them. So let them in, feel them, and put something next to that. And what you put next to that is character. That is character. That's courage. That's temperance. That's staying calm. That's doing the right thing. And I think, if you can do that in the right moment, that's where life boils down to. It's not about the externals. It's about the internals. And the externals will come. And that's rewarding, of course. It's great to win a gold medal. But it comes from the heart. And I think that's a big difference if you look at it. Well, we just want to win and that's it. And winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. I don't agree.
Yeah, plus you were speaking about this earlier too. When you're just seeking results, you'll be like, you're essentially telling yourself, I'll be happy when this happens.
Yeah. Right?
So it's almost like, also like kind of borrowing from psychology here, you're almost conditioning your mind. I'll be happy when, I'll be happy when. So essentially, by conditioning your mind that way, anytime that result comes, because you've already changed your mind to look for the next thing to make you happy, even if you get that result, you will not be happy, which is which is very interesting as far as that goes. Yeah. So that mindset doesn't work.
Yeah. And actually the pressure is higher if you think that way. So it won't help you achieve your results. Yeah. So even if you want to get those results, it's you should look at it to relax more and to put the pressure off too. So I think it helps you get better results and be happier, or at least if you're not happy chasing a result, you know it. You don't have to fool yourself. You think, okay, this is what I want to do, but I want to protect my life. I know winning or losing doesn't mean I'm a good or bad person. That's got nothing to do with it. So separate those two. Separate the externals and the internals.
Yeah. Yeah, so did you want
to? Oh, yeah. No, and also on the topic of, let's say, the football team that you were talking about, when they lose, say, we played better, but we deserve to win, like that sort of thing. Well, if, I mean, hypothetically, if they had essentially accepted, right, that they lost, right, they were, you know, amor fati, they were, you know, sort of in love with their fate, right? Like they understood that they lost. Essentially, you could argue by acceptance that can then also free you up of those resources, give you that space to then maybe win next time, right? Essentially.
Yeah. But wait, now I have a difficult question. So, okay. Yeah. So, Mark, I'm sure it's like this in your country as well. But in the United States, I mean, the understanding here is that you have to be obsessed with winning. So it's like if you don't have like this deep, not only just passion, but this deep pain at losing, if you don't feel like, you know, you want to tear your heart out and your hair out when you lose, the understanding here is that you'll never be a winner. So when we point to athletes, and because we and it's funny too, because we just talked about this week with another guest. So when you point to like the Tom Brady's and the Michael Jordan's, like these are people who are pained by losing, right? So that is very antithetical to the Stoic mindset.
Yeah.
So you're saying, I think what you're saying, and this is the question, right? Can you have both? Can you have a world where the person has a degree of temperance and a high degree of it, not Tom Brady, who's like cursing everybody out and screaming on the sideline, but yet they're still winners? Because I've yet to see that, especially in American sports. For the people who are significant and like they're champions, you know, these are people for the most part who can't really control their emotions.
No, I have an example of that. And for the record, of course, because you put a lot of self in there and you're under a lot of pressure, of course you feel bad if you lose. That's nothing wrong with that. Of course you feel hurt. There's nothing wrong with that. Of course, and I agree, if you want to win, it should hurt somewhere because it means you care. Mm-hmm. It means you put a lot of yourself out there, and that hurts. And that hurt can be there. It can really hurt. But the next thing is that hurt, right? The impulse. What do you do with it? If you still cry or lash out 2-3 hours after a competition, maybe you're a little baby, right? You maybe you get yourself together, man up, and respect your opponent, etc. Don't lash out, don't do the wrong things. But that's hard, man. That's so hard, because 3 days, I have an example, for the Olympics, when I won on a gold medal, I raced 1,000 meters and I got in fifth, and I thought I had a bigger chance on the 1,000 meters. So I was really devastated by that loss. I thought, oh my God, I have one chance left. This should have been my medal, and I'm fifth. And I had a water bottle, and we were with our team, with my teammates, we were 4th, 5th, and 6th. So we were out of the podium. So everybody was down, and we came into the dressing room, and I had my water bottle. And if you think I'm really stoic, think again, because that's why I need stoicism to control, really to work on this every day. Yeah. And I threw my water bottle at the wall. It splashed. And then everybody was dead silent for 10 minutes. My coach, our three team members. So nobody said a word. Everybody really was like, whoa, it hurt. And I was feeling frustrated. I was feeling angry. So I packed my skates in my bag. I went back to the Olympic Village. And when you enter an Olympic Village, it's like it's like an airport, right? You have the scanning apparatus, the people standing there, security, and it's in Canada and Vancouver. So these people are so nice, and these are volunteers, so really nice Canadian volunteers. And I thought to myself, the first somebody I see and steps in front of me, I have to lash out my anger or yell or scream, or I felt so much frustration. And then this Canadian volunteer said to me, "Sir, great that you're here. How was your day?"
And I'm like, let me tell you how my day was.
Let me tell you. I'm like, whoa, I got to stop here. You know, this is where things go wrong. You know, I lost a race, and that really, really hurt. So I put my skates on through the security. And I think I said something like, well, not too good, but thanks for asking. And I went to my Olympic apartment, and I said, okay, now you have to quit, right? All the lessons you have had in stoicism, in philosophy, keep yourself together. If this person has got nothing to do with my hurt, it's me, I'm hurting. So it's not good to lash out. If I ruin my character by lashing out, I'll ruin much more than just the outcome of a race. And that's what I don't want to do. So I put my bag aside and I thought, okay, you've been whining for 2 hours now. Stop it. You got one chance left. It's in 3 days. I'm not going to skate tomorrow. I just take a rest day. I went into Vancouver with my wife. It was a beautiful day. Sun's out, coffee. Didn't think about speed skating. The next day I wake up and I feel reborn. I skate really well. And I thought, okay, it's up to you, right? I don't skate for a revenge for a race. I don't skate to only prove myself. I want to finish this journey I'm on for 12 years with the people who've been supporting me. And I want, when the gun goes off, I want to show everybody what I can do, because I know I can do this. And that's, for me, was such a more powerful way to look at it. So don't lash out, don't blame anyone. But it's not my first impulse, of course. So right. I understand athletes. It's not their first impulse. And you put a lot of yourself in there, but still you have the capacity to turn it around. And you should turn it around, I think.
Right. So what I hear you saying is that it's temperance, but it's not full temperance, where it's not like the good and the bad. So on the one hand, you're not lashing out at people, you're not making people feel bad about themselves. But on the other hand, you're also not diminishing the passion for it as well. Because I think for people, because I think for people learning about stoicism, they would say, well, okay, here's then the question, right? I think this will be the difficult question. You know, they would say, okay, so let's say becoming an Olympic champion, right? So, you know, you said in these interviews, I'm winning the gold medal, right? That's somebody who's really hungry. But somebody on the other end would say, but wait, if for Stoics, this is just a preferred indifferent, right? So meaning you can have it, you can't have it, you know, it's more about your character. Then how do you get the passion for that? So if it's not against something that's such a necessity, why would you even need it that badly?
No, it could lead, if you say it like this, it could lead like apathy, right? So it's not important. But if you look at it that way, you could say, my judgment is good. I chase the right things, right? Temperance, justice, etc., wisdom. So, but I do nothing. I just sit on a mountaintop, and I'm really temperate. I'm really righteous. I'm the perfect human being. I'm a sage, right? But you do nothing. How can we say that you're a sage if you're not tested? So you test yourself in the most extreme environments, which professional sports is. And that's what I love about the Stoics, right? Marcus Aurelius was an emperor. He tested himself during a pandemic, during a war. So it's easy to stay calm. It's easy to stay humble, unless somebody throws an axe at you, or if you're in a really high pressure situation. So the test of character is the test. Where you stand when things go wrong, where do you stand if you're hurt or if you're angry, et cetera, et cetera. So I believe the Stoics say, and maybe not the earlier Stoics, but especially the Romans, like, we have the ultimate sage who is always calm, always does the right thing and the wise thing, right? But we're human beings, we're flawed. And it's not wrong, I think. It's not wrong to chase a gold medal. It's not wrong to be really good in wanting to building a business or a scientist, etc. I think it's beautiful if you chase big dreams, but that means you put yourself out there, so you get challenged, so you will feel human emotions. And what you can do is turn it around and act in the right way. And that's difficult. That's really difficult to do. So I think that's, you grow and you learn, you'll get better at it. That's what the prokopton in Greece, what the Stoics would say, what this means. You're learning, you're growing. Yeah. We are not a perfect sage who does everything right, probably. You're learning and you're getting there, but you have to try to get there, and you have to try to overcome these obstacles and these setbacks and these difficult situations.
I love that. So what I'm hearing you say, and obviously, please correct me if I'm wrong, but what I hear you say, it's that the Stoic isn't exactly a perfectly temperamental human. That what it is, it's actually a more mature way or an enlightened way of navigating different situations. So it's sort of like, you know, everything has its season. So like, it's okay to pursue a gold medal and it's okay for you to be the best. But then when you have to put that away, let's say when you lose, let's say, you know, when your time ends at the sport, you know, whenever you're angry or you feel like, oh my God, you know, I don't want to, like, I feel like I can't do this anymore or whatever. And maybe you even want to give up for your own kind of personal reasons. But the point is to say that you're able to more so fluctuate and navigate with these different experiences. So it's like, in a way, Stoicism is not, I would say, a consolation, yes, but not just that. But it's, again, a sort of a particular way of being in that particular space. So whereas on the one hand, let's say, you know, you're kind of putting, going all in on the gold medal and you're saying, okay, this is what I really want. But again, if, let's say, that when the time finally ends, either, let's say, I don't know, again, you're done with the sport, or you feel like, okay, I've won and I have to find other things to do, right? Yeah. But the point is to say, now you're able to apply the Stoic mindset. So what I hear you saying is, it's not that the Stoic mindset is applicable in every single situation and every single time. It's just you have to pick and choose and know when to use, like, these particular, let's say, you know, kind of frameworks in order for you to live the best possible life. But again, it's not to say that the Stoic is like a Buddhist where they're just perfectly even keel. That's not, right? So what I hear you saying, what I hear you saying is, the Stoic is the person who's able to kind of flow in and out of life.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by a Stoic mindset. Like, I'm not a philosopher. I don't teach philosophy. It's my understanding of Stoicism, how to practice, put it into practice. Like, Marcus Aurelius wasn't a philosopher, actually. Seneca wasn't. Epictetus was a slave, born as a slave. But so how you put things in practice, and there's a lot of wisdom in there to put into practice, I think, is the beauty of it. Just using it as an athlete, using it as an emperor, using it as an entrepreneur, using it as a scientist or as a bricklayer or a carpenter. I think it's really, that's what I love. It's really practical. It's not an academic philosophy, like sitting back and talking about what a good man should be, like Marcus Aurelius said. It's, no, here's the test for you. You show up. Show us, right? Of what Epictetus would say, you can be a carpenter, you can talk about building a great house, but show us how a great house looks like.
I love that. Did you want to say something?
Well, it's just that it strikes me that Stoicism is more of a, like, a pro, like, when you think of Stoicism, you think of it as like someone who, and we've covered this already, but essentially someone who's sort of emotionless, calm, able to handle every situation. It was tempered. However, it sounds like more of a process of, like, I almost think of it as, like, the word tempering comes to mind. Like, oh, you're tempering your judgments. You're tempering your reasoning. You're it almost feels like it's like a process that you go through with each situation, as you were talking about. Like, that's how you flow in and out. It's like, it's just a constant process of being, essentially.
Right. Oh, I love that.
I don't even think Marcus Aurelius was a natural Stoic, right? Not a natural Stoic. I always say my wife is probably more natural Stoic, right? She's more temperate, she's more easy, she's more relaxed. I'm like ambitious. I want to go there and there and there. But if I don't think of it, I'll maybe ambitious and reach a goal, what I don't really want to reach, maybe because somebody else likes it or it's good for this or that, externals, et cetera, et cetera. So I really have to train myself and adjust myself every day because it's not natural always. So that's where a Stoic mindset comes from. It's not, I'm the perfect Stoic and I teach you how you can be perfect Stoic as well. No, I'm a human being with emotions, with drive, with everything there is. But I've learned that life becomes much better, and it's a great addition to keep yourself calm, grounded, and make sure you live a good life, a happy life, a life full of joy and great experiences, and not live a life of anger and being angry, being jealous, doing things egoistically or for your own. Because I think Stoicism, it's a lot about community, a lot about working together, a lot about being happy during the process, feeling fulfilled in the journey you encounter instead of the end result. So I think there's just so much life wisdom, life lessons in there.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I have to say this. I was thinking to say this before. I purposefully, kept it. But so do you know who Eckhart Tolle is by any chance?
No.
So, okay. So he essentially, he's not a Stoicist, but
he's more of a Buddhist.
He's not even a Buddhist, but he wrote this book. It's called The Power of Now. It's like Eastern philosophy.
Oh, Eckhart. Yeah. I know. Eckhart Tolle.
Eckhart Tolle.
We pronounce it differently, I think, here in Europe. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. So there's one thing that he said on the topic of, if you think you're so he basically said, if you think you're enlightened, spend 2 weeks with your parents. Right. Like, basically, that's like how you could test yourself. Like, you think you're the sage, on the mountaintop and all that. No, put yourself through the ringer. Really put yourself in these different situations. So honestly, it's more of a throwaway comment. I'm just sorry. I was holding that back because I was so excited to say it when we were talking about that. But yeah, but I know you wanted to. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, yeah. It's funny if you talk about parents, I had a conflict with my parents. Yeah. And if I read Epictetus, it's also a lot about your role in life. You're born out of your parents. You didn't get to choose your parents. You didn't get to choose your role. You didn't get to choose your upbringing. So that's your fate. So you better accept that. I fought my father. And apart from the judgment part I was telling about, it's also, he's my father. He's my mother. If I do or don't like them, I hope I do, but they're my father and mother. I was born to them out of fate. That's my fate in life. I can change that, or maybe if I want to, but I can't. So I have to accept it, and not only accept it, but even if I can, love it, because that's the reality of life. There is no other life. And I think that's such a beautiful, in my book, I call it accept your fate and love it. Hits on the concept of amor fati, Nietzsche's term. But I think that's such a nice way where Stoicism comes together, because it's irrationally, it's the only really option you have. And I know a lot of people who have a really hard time, a big pressure on their shoulders. And that's different for everybody. Your fate is different than my fate, et cetera, et cetera. But logically, if you want to lead a good life, the only thing you can do is accept that reality and even try to love it, because that's your life. So loving life, getting out there in life, doesn't mean everything is happy, everything's great. No, it's accepting the reality life throws at you and try to make a great artwork or a great theater show out of it. So I think that's the challenge we all face in life.
Yeah. And what I love about Stoicism, again, going back to the concept of consolation, is it gives you a baseline for what's good enough. So like as a psychotherapist, because I practice CBT is based on Stoicism, cognitive behavioral therapy. So what we often talk about is like, okay, so here's this thing that you really wanted and you didn't get. But what does that actually say about you? What does that say about your character, right? How much does it matter? Like, these are the questions that we ask. So when the person says, when you start reflecting, because I mean, you know, the knee-jerk reaction is like, oh, I'm fucking pissed. I'm a loser. Nobody's going to love me, whatever, right? So it's all of these, comments that people always say. So, but when you start thinking about what you actually do have and what you possess, so let's say you lost the big game, right? So then you would ask, okay, but how did you handle the loss? And the person might say, well, I felt like my teammates were really down, and as a captain, they looked to me. So I had to kind of console them. I told them all of the good things that they did. I told them the things that they could work on. I told them things that I wasn't even able to do that I was proud of, and so on and so forth. So again, Stoicism gives you this baseline for what's good enough. So let's say the person can go from like, hey, I desperately want to be a winner, to maybe I really want to be a great captain. So it goes from, okay, we didn't win this trophy, so I didn't get this thing, right? But on the other hand, I was always able to control whether or not I'm a good captain. So whether that does or doesn't lead to something in the future, I mean, nobody can really know, obviously, until the time comes. But the point of Stoicism, again, as a kind of the focal point of consolation here, I think is really important. Because if we're talking about living the best possible life and just getting the most out of it, not just in terms of winning, but in terms of relationships, in terms of like happiness, diminishment and suffering, this is it, right? You go from, and again, this is is like one example because there are different ways to do this. But I love that a person can go from, and there's so many great examples of this in sports. Yeah. You could go from, okay, I'm no longer a winner, but I still feel like I'm a good captain. I feel like I'm a great leader and my teammates turn to me. And then let's say, you know, when we were all feeling down, they felt like I was a source of comfort for them. And that's what I love the most about Stoicism. And again, I don't think it's black and white where a person has to choose one or the other. You don't have to deeply disdain losing to feel like, oh my God, you know, like I can actually be a winner. Like you can kind of have, you know, eat your cake and have it too here. And again, this is the best part about Stoicism is that it looks to good enough, and good enough can be good enough.
Yeah, but if even if you're a captain, that's your role. You know, yeah. We all have a different role to play in life. Mm-hmm. The Stoics would say also, it's your role. And if that's your role and you're made for that role, you're a great leader or a great captain, you are in your role and you can help other people play better probably, yeah. Which you can help them to win. So in that sense, your win, their win becomes your win, right? So you have the role as a captain. I think that's beautiful because if you look at winning or having a great result there, it's if things go well and you have a great team and you do well, that's great, man. You can use doping, you can cheat on numbers, and you can win on the sheets, right? But is that winning? No, it's not. Of course not. If you have to put somebody down or really yell at somebody or hurt somebody all the way, there's a price you pay for winning, and that's not the price you want to pay. And I think you have to really take that into account so we get blinded by winning or the end result. And if you're a captain, I know a lot of guys I skated with, they were less talented skaters, but they got a lot of out of their career and they became great entrepreneurs or leaders or volunteers in their life. And I think that's the essence. You know, if you're on your deathbed and you look back at today, you don't say, oh, I won that gold medal. You say, hey, that coach believed in me and he was still there with me. That friend there over there who supported me from 10 years old was there with me. So we are fundamentally human beings and we ache for social connection and together in a journey in life with all these people. That's what's, I think, that's what life is about.
And what's so interesting is I can only just point to a few sports here, obviously, because, you know, being an American. But like in football, the interesting thing about it is it's such a weird sport in the sense that like you can have somebody who at least on the surface doesn't seem to be that great of a, let's say coach, let's use that as an example, like for leadership, right? So he doesn't seem to be that great of a coach. And because people seem to really love him and fight for him and play for him, that seems to be able to overcome that. So if they can handle, so initially, I mean, like this is a little bit crude and I'm not saying this happens often, but when it does happen, it's fucking magical. So you have this coach who's like sort of good, but not really.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they start losing, right? And then the fans are like, oh my God, you know, we got to get him out of here. He's terrible. He's not meant for it, whatever, right? And then you'll see an uproar of support from the players. And even though the coach is still not that good, somehow or other, the team seems to be playing much better. A little bit of luck here, a little bit of luck there. Again, people are like really playing hard for him. And somehow or other, the team ends up in the playoffs. So what's so interesting, and I'm not saying this is exactly and should be used as a means to an end, but in a very, very kind of, again, magical way, that life kind of compensates for bad coaching. So again, if the person is a good leader and people will fight for him, listen, maybe they'll win a Super Bowl, maybe they won't, but the point is to say they'll get much closer to it than if you have, let's say, somebody who's a super smart and talented coach and people hate him.
Well, this is actually where Stoicism, of course, based on Socrates, and Socrates' Socratic questioning is great to do to get more insights in this. And I think that's also in professional sports. And in every environment you encounter a great thing to do, because you could ask the question, what is a good coach? What makes a coach a great coach? Is it just a gold medal or a win? Or maybe is a great coach somebody who can be a bad coach at a certain things, but is a great coach in putting a team together, which they can get results with. So questioning, going back to a question on what it means to be a great coach, what it means to win a gold medal, what it means, I think that's where a lot of wisdom can be gained, not just get in the red race of winning or doing everybody else is doing. No, think for yourself, be unique, be independent in your thinking and in your questioning what it means. And I think if you do that, then you can separate and you can get a great definition what works for you, for what a great coach means for you, or what an Olympic medal means for you, or whatever you're chasing means for you. It should be something I think is worthwhile to find out for yourself in life. I think that's the challenge in life, to get out there, learn, grow. The Stoics would call it eudaimonia, right? Like Aristotle did. And that's not getting the end result or getting the happiness, etc. It's growing, it's flourishing, it's learning by doing, getting out there, embracing life, the highs and the lows.
Yep. And then so as we start to wrap up soon, so I want to really go back to the story because I think it's probably the most poignant one out of everything that you told. So it seems like, you know, on the surface, obviously, because you're an Olympic champion, that seems to be the most gripping one. But in terms of the application of Stoic philosophy, it's actually the personal stuff that seems, at least to me, much more important. Mm. So you already talked about your dad. Can you actually now also tell us again, as we start to wrap up, sort of what experiences you had actually with your mom, which seemed to have been way more significant, at least, you know, my reading of it. And then how you applied Stoic philosophy to your relationship with her.
Yeah, that's actually was the last part and maybe the hardest part for myself, because my mother was severely depressed for 10 years. She committed suicide in 2012, 2 years after I won a gold medal. And that's hard and that's really sad. And I can look at it right now, like the love is still there and I learned a lot from her. But before the Olympics in 2002, what I learned from that is, you know, the saddest thing was not even for my mother to pass away. It was for her not to fully live because she was depressed. And, you know, depression, it's also a disease. I can come up with a lot of reasoning and a lot of Stoic mindset ideas. It didn't help her. You know, it's something what happened was it was me. I didn't want her to die. I want her to be there, but she was also taking a lot of energy. So I had to call her up right before the Olympic Games. And what's the hardest choice in my life I ever had to make was to tell her to stay home. So I didn't want her to come to Vancouver because that would cost a lot of emotional stress on her, which she couldn't handle, and also on me. So what I learned was, this is my life. This is my journey. I love my mother. So out of love, I really have to protect her and not let her come to Vancouver, and also protect my own journey for going there. And that was hard, but I still stand by that choice. And she passed away 2 years later. And for me, I think it's so, for me, it was really, wow. Death, not my own death, but the death of my mother really confronted me with the fact that we have one life to live and we better choose to spend it wisely and not let it just fumble away or being mindless, chasing goals and like gold medals, and not think of the love you share with your mother or with the people around you to make it worthwhile every day. Like Seneca would say, every day if we go to sleep, we have to thank fortune for what we encountered today. And yeah, that's, I think that helped me a lot. So death can be a good lesson. Thinking about death can be a good lesson, I think, to make life more epic or make life more beautiful out of love. So there's grief, there's hurt, but there's also a lot of love for life next to that. And that's what I take away from my mother, the love for life, the love from her to me. So death is not the end of that for me, but for her, it was the end of a grueling path. So, and that's hard. I couldn't change that. So for me, the lesson was, I cannot change it. I have to accept that she doesn't want to be here anymore. And I didn't really, now I can, but then it was hard for me. I have to make choices for myself to protect myself and protect her. And for myself, I want to live life in the best way possible, the most wisest or most beautiful way possible with my kids, with my family around me.
So would you
would
you say that was the moment when you realized you really couldn't save anyone?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, actually, yeah, that's, you say it beautifully. That's true. Yeah, I couldn't save her. And that hurt.
Yeah.
That really hurt. Still does. I couldn't save her, and that's what you want to do, right? Yeah. Save your mother. Only that's not up to me. It's not up to me as her child to save her. It's not my place to be in as a kid towards my father and mother. I don't want my kids to save me. It's my life. So it's not about saving her, but coming to terms with letting her go and accepting her choice. And yeah, that's not, it's easy to say, it's hard to do. That doesn't happen within a day or within a week. You can be stoic or call yourself stoic. It doesn't matter. I think it's, that takes time, but stoicism and philosophy really, really helped me with that, to think about it and give it a right place.
Any particular ideas that stood out for you at that time?
Yeah, that was, it was actually thinking about death. Actually, if you look at Socrates or Seneca, how they died, right? With,
right.
a lot of theater. Yeah, Stoics were busy with dying well, actually. Mm-hmm. they Marcus Aurelius wrote his last lines in a meditation. So they didn't complain about death. They really were upfront with death. And I think that's a beautiful way. If you can, yeah, follow that same philosophy up till the last day you live. So actually, I think my mother was pretty brave to take her own life. And this sounds weird, maybe, but I don't blame her for it. I don't think it's bad, or it's like something that's weak. I think it demands a lot of strength to take control of your own life. And I think that's the last thing for her that she could control. Mm-hmm. I think that's, maybe it's a beautiful way. I think it's a pretty stoic way, actually, if I read the Stoics. So I find comfort in that. We weren't there. So by then I was still fighting a little bit with her for me. So, but that was my anger. It's my judgment. I wanted her to live longer. So I put my judgment on her. You cannot die. You have to be here. But that's my pain. It's my loss. Mm. So what, that's again, going back to judgment and going back to what you can control and not control. I really had to let go of that thought and think, yeah, it's her choice. It's not up to me. This is not, it's my hurt, but it's mine. It's not hers.
Right.
So later on, I got into contact with people who guided their mother or father into taking their own life, or doing that in a beautiful manner. And I thought, wow, that's something you can do too. And that's the capacity someone has to make their own choice. And that had helped me to let go of that. The pain is mine. The judgment is mine. It's not my mother's. This is her choice, which I have to respect and accept. So really divide these two things. And that gives a lot of peace of mind, actually. And that helps me to deal with it.
Right. And it also seems like, I mean, that you loved her as much as she loved you, because from what you're saying, it does come from a place of deep love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I wrote a text about it on LinkedIn or on Instagram. I saw a beautiful picture of her, and I wrote a little story about this, that it's, you know, I was made out of love between my mother and my father, and I experienced a lot of love, and that love is still there. And that's the love for life. Right. I love this life. And I've seen how it can backfire and et cetera. So we all have our demons. We all have our dark sides. We all have our, for me, my, like I said, I'm not that stoic for myself, but I use this life philosophy to balance out my life, to live a better life, to live and embrace my life fully, to not be confronted every day with negative emotions or be burdened by negative emotions, but to take charge of them and take leadership to just devise the best life possible by following Stoic principles, and they help me to see what's important in life and what's not, what to chase and what not, or if I'm chasing something, why do I do this? To deal with loss with love, etc. So all these human emotions.
I love it. Oh my God. That's such a beautiful endpoint. Okay, Alan, final questions for Mark as we wrap up.
Yes. If we wanted to follow you, follow your work, and of course, buy the book, where can we do that?
Yeah, you can find the Stoic Mindset probably online everywhere. So you can follow me on Instagram, on LinkedIn, just by my name, Mark Tuitert. It's hard to pronounce in English. You did it quite well, actually. T-U-I-T-E-R-T. Yeah. On my website, Mark, MarkTuitert.nl. You'll come on the English website. So I'm mostly LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, or X. It's called nowadays. So you can find me there and let me know what you think of the book and how it helps you to deal with situations in life. I always love to hear stories about people applying these Stoic ideas.
I love it. Mark, absolutely. Thank you so much for such a fascinating conversation.
This is awesome. Yeah.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. It was great.
Absolutely, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Yeah. Great.
See ya. Bye.
All right. That was awesome. So everyone, if you like this episode, you can follow us at Seize the Moment Podcast on Facebook and on Instagram. On Twitter, we're at Seize_podcast. Like, subscribe,
hit the bell on YouTube.
And again, thank you so much for watching and see you next time.